This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Dashran Johan. The Joint Action Group for Gender Equality, also known as JAG, which comprises of various NGOs such as WAO, AWAM and Sisters in Islam, released a statement recently urging Parliament to reconvene immediately so that the issue of the growing gender disparity in Malaysia can be addressed and debated. So as we all know, Parliament has not been in session since Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin declared a state of emergency back in January. So joining me on the show today to discuss the issue of gender disparity and also share their thoughts on why Parliament should be allowed to reconvene is Yu Renchung, the Deputy Executive Director of the Women's Aid Organisation, and Shirin Dunisha, the Programme and Operations Manager of the All Women Action Society. Welcome to the show, guys. Let's jump right into it. Renchung, as I understand, WAO led the writing of this statement. What inspired you to release this statement?
Thanks, Ashwin. You know, I think everyone is aware of how important Parliament is in any country. In Malaysia, you know, our Parliament's been closed for the year. And that means that any law reform discussion, any oversight, parliamentary oversight, just ceased to exist. And you know, I think everyone, you know, we get it. You know, we need to maintain and we need to contain and deal with COVID. But that doesn't mean that Parliament cannot sit. You know, what other country in the world has done this, right, besides us?
We have to remember that Parliament is actually part of government, right? So there's the executive and the judiciary, and Parliament is a huge, it's one part of government. So we understand, as what Renchung has said, the purpose of suspending Parliament was to pour in more efforts, you know, to focus on efforts on COVID-19 recovery. But having said that, it's been closed for about coming to 7 months now.
Right.
And to be honest, our cases are not getting any better. There's no end of the light looming, you know, at the end of the tunnel. Mm. We are still in the very long tunnel. And it is high time for Parliament to get back, because if people can continue to operate in school, and schools are also having their sessions, regardless whether it's online, you know, I think Parliament should look into ways to see how they need to operate, you know, they need to function despite of all these circumstances.
Yeah. And so let's talk about some of the reasons, especially for you guys, why it's important to open Parliament. Shirin, in the statement, it's mentioned that the gender gap or disparity has been increasing over the past year, and this is due to a lack of gender-based responses. Now, why is it important to look at and respond to various social and economical issues through the lens of gender?
It's simply because the impact of COVID-19 is not the same for everyone. You know, as the press statement has also said, women face higher risk of domestic violence because of the MCO, and, you know, the restrictions on movement, people are working from home, there's more time spent being confined in smaller places, you are unable to really release your stress or really go anywhere just to chill out. So all this adds up to exacerbate the potential risk of higher exposure to domestic violence. And as you can see, it has already been evidenced by the rise, the increase in phone calls, you know, in case management, you know, by our various headlines, you know, in WAO, you know, and also with AWAM, you know, some cases that we find happens in other states, and people need to cross state lines, and right, it's having, you need to cross and you got to get police state permission, right? Mm-hmm. And all this adds up to the urgency of the matter, as well as shelters, you know, shelters that we know of are either very full or it's limited, and some are even closed and not accessible. So all that adds up as well, you know, and we are talking about women face differential economic risk, the fallout from COVID-19. As you know, business are closing down or, you know, reducing their operations. So most women are generally employed in part-time work, and they are always the first ones to be let go, lah, you know? Mm. And because of that, you can see that there are the overrepresentation of women in this hardest hit sectors are already making them further vulnerable to job losses, and as well as a lack of social security protection.
Right.
And, you know, and coupled with that, women, we know based from various surveys and data as well, they tend to be the people who are responsible for unpaid care. Mm. So again, with MCO, with more people working from home, women took on additional family care responsibilities, especially so because of social distancing. So this further limits the equal participation of women in the economy. We need to start looking at the gender lens to see how we can, the various grants and aids that the government have put out, the programs that government have put out, will actually reach out to those who are really in need.
And just to add on that, looking at the data, it's just exactly what, you know, Shirin was saying.
Mm-hmm.
On domestic violence, following the first MCO last year,
right,
calls to W increased fourfold. Until today, the level is still almost double as to what they were during normal times. A study put out by the UN showed that in Malaysia, search terms, so people searching online for domestic violence help, information, how to get help for domestic violence, increased by 70%. And actually, that was the highest percentage rise in all the countries that were included in the study. There were a few countries in Asia that were included. And Malaysia was the highest, 70% increase. That's on domestic violence. So we see that MCO and conditions set out by COVID has created an environment where already before that, women were more susceptible to abuse. And now that has worsened. The second point on economic rights and livelihood, as Shirin was mentioning, we see that borne out in the data as well. Before the pandemic, we already knew women had unequal conditions in the workforce. Women face, a survey put out by WAO last year showed that more than half of women have faced some form of job discrimination. We knew that labor force participation in women was among the lowest in the world in Malaysia.
Right.
At less than 60%, 55% compared to men at 80%. And what did COVID do? That made it even worse, as Shirin was saying. Labor force participation dropped for women, as well as for men, but more for women. More women became unemployed. The unemployment rate for women increased more than men following COVID. And we know why, right? As Shirin was saying, due to the nature of the job, but also Kazana Research Institute put out a study showing that the reason why, before the pandemic, the reason why a lot of women were not in the labor force, 2 million women, in fact, were not in the labor force was because of household and family care responsibilities.
Right.
Following COVID, what do we see? Record numbers of people dropped out of the labor force in the last 20 years, highest in 20 years at least, dropped out of the labor force, citing exactly that, household child care responsibilities. So for all these reasons, we see that COVID and MCO has hit women harder, and therefore we need our response, just like how we need different response for people of different income levels, people living in different states. We need a different response based on gender as well. So that, and the goal is to ensure that everyone is included in this kind of response. And that's one reason why Parliament is so key to come back. Because, you know, through Parliament, there's going to be some accountability and some oversight of all these stimulus and all these response packages.
Rinchong, that's what I want to ask you next, right? Because you say Parliament is key, but how will the reopening of Parliament allow you to address these various gender-based issues? Because I think there is a perception by many that reopening Parliament is all, you know, it's just going to open the gates to party politicking, you know, arguments about who has the numbers. How would you respond to this?
I think there are three things. So one is, you know, what other country in the world has closed down Parliament
mm-hmm.
to respond to COVID? You know, that's number one. So we don't need to because of COVID. Number two, to the point that you mentioned on politicking, I mean, even beyond, you know, COVID or beyond the issues that we're looking at, it's a question of legitimacy and democracy. So mm-hmm. so we need Parliament to sit, you know, just for those core democratic principles. And number three is you know, regardless of what some people may think and want to do, there's no other body in this country that can play the role that Parliament can, which is to pass laws and crucially during these times to provide that parliamentary oversight and accountability to government policy. So you know, there may be other reasons and you know, why some people may have, you know, perceptions of why Parliament should not sit, but that does not negate the key point that, you know, having a functioning Parliament is key to any country, and it's key to providing a more accountable response to what's going on currently.
Certainly. It is important to open Parliament. We do need to go for a very quick break. I'm speaking with Yu Renchung, the Deputy Executive Director of Women's Aid Organization, and Shirin Junisha, the Program and Operations Manager at the All Women Action Society. And what we are talking about, why you know, various women's rights NGOs have come together to urge the government to reopen Parliament immediately. We'll be back after the break on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is Yu Renchung, the Deputy Executive Director of the Women's Aid Organization, and Shirin Junisha, the Program and Operations Manager of the All Women's Action Society. And I'm speaking with them today because of a statement the Joint Action Group for Gender Equality, which WAO and AWAM are part of. They released a statement urging the government to reopen Parliament immediately. Now, Shirin, let's look at some of the demands that have been made in the statement that y'all released and take a look at the issues that have led to these demands. So your first demand is to pass the sexual harassment bill. Why is this important?
Okay, why is this important? Because we are seeing these cases. On a rise, you know, exponential rise. It's not because that it has suddenly happened. It has been happening, but because of the being facilitated with this combination of awareness and social media and certain cases, certain people coming to the forefront, you know, that has made a lot of people who have experienced sexual harassment to voice out. So obviously, when this happens, you know that the response from the state is inadequate. And what has happened is, you can see even from the data from Telinita Awam's hotline, mm-hmm. In the first quarter of this year alone, we have received calls, about 346 calls. And out of that, 87 is regarding sexual harassment cases. And out of that is 57 is physical and 35 is online. Regardless of categories of harassment, it still means it's on the rise. And worryingly, the youngest survivor is called in, was 10 years old. And the oldest, I think, is about 50 or 60. So it goes across the wide spectrum of age. It's not just targeted at a specific age group. Yeah. Mm. And again, we have been very We've been making this call for about a number of years now, you know, almost two decades, right?
Right.
And because obviously the need is there, the situation is calls for it, and the current response, the current legal mechanism, the framework that is available now, it's just not enough, inadequate, because you have the code of practice, but that's for workplace. And what else? You know, you have the penal code, but even under the penal code, that depends on the, you've done the police report, and it's also up for on the discretion of the Attorney General's chambers, you know, whether to bring it up for prosecution. So there's always that gap in there as well. And even if you want, for me, if I want to take this on in a civil case, it will be so expensive because you need legal representation anyway, right? So it all acts as a barrier. So the reason for this anti-sexual harassment bill that we have actually, we are gunning towards to be tabled in Parliament, repassed in Parliament, is because it all adds up. It addresses all those gaps. You know, it makes dispensation of justice, access to justice easier.
Yep.
It covers, the definition itself covers everybody in Malaysia. So you are not just a person who's being employed. You are also a student, because we've seen case with Ayn, you know, and many others as well. You're not just a student. There's an intern, you know, people on the streets, you know, the public spaces. And worryingly as well, you know, in our recent data analysis, analysis, we found that at least 59% of those reported having survived, you know, mm-hmm. having faced sexual harassment, are really afraid of really reporting because the perpetrator happens to be in a position of power.
Right.
So that you can see they don't feel safe, whatever it is. And therefore, the anti-sexual harassment bill is actually set up to provide that safety provision for the survivors.
Yeah. We knew sexual harassment has been an issue and has continued to be an issue. Just because this COVID MCO doesn't mean that sexual harassment goes away. In fact, we still have seen cases being reported. We know that, you know, based on YouGov, for example, did a study in 2019 in Malaysia, and they estimated that 36% of women have faced some form of sexual harassment, and 16% of men have as well. Mm. So, you know, the cases that come out lately are on have been from university students, school students, on sexual harassment that they face. And we know also from studies that sexual harassment occurs in three places mostly. First, work. Second, public spaces. And third, educational institutions. So that's schools, college, universities. So if we take the example of universities, currently what is happening? Students are beholden to the response by the university.
Right.
So for example, if you're at a university like UM, UM has a sexual harassment policy. They have a committee and so on. Of course, there are gaps and, you know, they're improving. But UM is an example of a university that at least they have a specific policy, specific committee looking into sexual harassment. Again, it's not completely perfect. Mm-hmm. But if you look at some other schools, there may be no sexual harassment policy. Yeah. There's no requirements for that university or college to prevent sexual harassment, to investigate sexual harassment. If it happens, who's going to report? What's the reporting mechanism? There's no requirement currently. So that means that if you're a student and you go to a university that has a good response, that's good. But for example, if you go to a university that does not have a policy, then what are you going to do? Your options are much more limited. You could go to the police and so on, but those have other challenges. So what one thing a sexual harassment bill would do is to say, hey, you know, any organization, whether you're employment, whether you're a school, university, whether you're a public transport operator, mall operator, you must have some kind of sexual harassment policy that meets these standards. And if something happens, if you get a report, how are you going to investigate? Here are the minimum steps you need to take. And number two, the bill would create an oversight mechanism. So for example, if a student faces sexual harassment and they report it to the university and the action provided is not satisfactory, the student can complain or bring their case to this oversight mechanism that would then either investigate the case or look into the university's actions.
Right.
So that's why we're saying a bill is so important and has been important for a while, but we've seen more and more cases coming up and people are fed up. People are ready and they want some action. Mm.
Now, Shirin, you brought up something important, interesting earlier about how, you know, the sexual harassment bill has been worked on for close to two decades now. I think it's been, 16, 17 years? So I'm very curious about strategy right now because the sexual harassment bill, which is extremely important, couldn't get passed even when Parliament was open as usual in the pre-pandemic era. It couldn't be passed even during Pakatan Harapan's time. So what is the plan this time heading into, let's say Parliament reopens, you know, in a couple of weeks' time or months' time or whatever. What is the strategy going in this time? How are y'all pushing the MPs in Parliament to make sure that this is something that will be signed, no postponements and no excuses anymore?
Right. Okay. Before that, may I clarify that actually it was never tabled, which is why it hadn't gotten passed yet.
Yes.
But I have to say all credit to the Pakatan Harapan's government. The momentum, the bill was drafted in consultation with various women's groups and various gender activists, experts as well. And it was actually ready. It was ready at the end of 2019. Mm. And the what was what was then scheduled was for the tabling of the bill in the first half of parliamentary session in 2020. Right. But of course, we all know what happened that in the first half before Parliament got managed to open and all. So all that gotten pushed back, pushed aside, and COVID happened. So we all decided to maybe just come together, you know, and in the spirit of solidarity to overcome COVID.
Right.
But then, you know, Parliament reopened and we received this announcement to say that, you know, they're looking at improving certain provisions, you know, of the bill. And that has taken us by surprise because we felt at that time it was perfect. It was ready, you know, it was really ready to be tabled and to be debated or whatsoever, fair enough, you know, go through the processes and to be passed. So when we received news of that happen, you know, so Awam took steps to really then, you know, gather in terms of strategy, get people, you know, get the people, whoever who feels related, who feels really connected with this issue to start advocating, you know, engaging with the MPs that they need to get this going. They need to make a demand on behalf of their voters who are the constituencies, who are the representatives who they represent, in saying that this is regardless, you know, it needs to be on top of the agenda the moment Parliament resumes, you know. So that was back then. But even now, you can see even more, it has become so dire. It's such an urgent need, you know, first and foremost, we need to have this legislation in place. And as part of a strategy as well, we are working with more and more younger groups, you know, out there. There's just so a lot of youth group because I think this resonates. This issue resonates with them. As Reng Chun has said, rightly said, it happens mainly as well, either in workplace, public spaces, and especially in educational institutions, right?
Right.
So most of them have said that I've gotten this, I received this either from since I was in primary school, secondary school, or in their tertiary institutions, you know. So a lot of them are saying, you know, what can I do? You know, I just do not want to sit down and then make a lot of noise, but I'm unable to make press for changes. So we said, look, you know, as a part of active citizenship, this is what you need to do. We have actually drafted a template letter, a write to your MP. It's available in both BM and English. You can, you know, get it from our social media and our website. Have them written, have them print them out and then sign them out and then present to the various, the MPs in your area. So this is the way because it has to work. It's either you work individually and as well as collectively because we have this petition going on, you know, it's to petition to get to press for the passing of the bill.
Right.
That is at now about 18,000 or 19,000. So that needs to be done as well because in concept, because it gives an overall form of support. But individually, the person, the voter, you need to also pressure or lobby or work with, get your MP to work for you because that's who they really are, you know? So that the MPs need to be accountable. At the end of the day, if you don't vote for me, I can always vote you out at the next general election. So we need to get this idea going with our citizens, with as well.
And Dashan, I just want to say, you know, NGOs have a very important role to play for sure.
Yes.
Politicians, government have a huge role and all have, your government agencies all have contributed in different ways. But I think if the question is what has changed, what is different this time, really it's that people, survivors, women have spoken up en masse.
Yeah.
And people, the politicians can no longer ignore what's going on the ground. That's what has changed. That's why this time is different. So if we look at what actually was the impetus for urgency for this round of law reform for the sexual harassment bill, it was the Sungai Buloh Hospital case, right? There was several incidences of harassment and you know, very serious kinds of sexual harassment and abuse going on in a hospital. Was reported, and that actually spurred a lot of anger and urgency to get all this going. We've seen that again with, you know, people like Ayn who have spoken up, and why did it resonate? It's because it's not just her. So many people resonated with that, and people are talking about it, you know, on TikTok, on Twitter, on Facebook, in their WhatsApp family, WhatsApp groups, in, you know, in so many fora that it can no longer be ignored. by politicians. And that's why we've seen in the past 3 years, significant movement towards actually creating some kind of solution.
Now, Renchung, the second thing that JAG is pushing for is the amendment to the 1955 Employment Act. What changes are y'all seeking for and why?
There are a few things. The first is looking at discrimination in the workplace. We know based on a study WA did last year with research company VAS.AI, that more than half of working women in Malaysia face some form of discrimination at the workplace. So this could be things like, because you're a young mother, your employer may not think you are going to work as hard as others.
Right.
It could be because you're a young married woman who may become a mother.
Yep.
Employers then have a negative perception of you. Or it could be for other reasons. There's been cases where employers do not allow women to wear tudung, for example. And that's also a form of gender discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
So currently, there are no laws that prohibit this kind of discrimination. So the first thing that we need is to have some kind of anti-discrimination provision in employment law. Well, there's a draft that has been produced by the Ministry of Human Resources in 2018-2019, process had begun underway and a draft had been produced. And that included actually, so there's a draft now, there's a draft law now sitting that actually prohibits discrimination in the workplace.
Right.
So these are all the things that have been pending. One area that we think needs to be included is discrimination against job seekers. That also needs to be included. Right now, the draft just says, protects against discrimination in the workplace, meaning if you're already employed, and it protects against discriminatory contracts. So contracts cannot have elements of discrimination. But say you're looking for a job or you're putting out a job ad, these areas are not covered currently in the draft law. So that's one area where we feel is a huge oversight, right? Because we know about half discrimination happens during the job recruitment phase itself. That's right. Number one, discrimination. Number two is looking at areas of paternity, maternity leave.
Hmm.
So where are we now currently? We know that in Malaysia, in the private sector, the maternity leave is 60 days, which is quite low actually. International standard is higher. It's more than 98 days is what the ILO, International Labour Organization, recognized. 98 days recommends. Government sector gets 90 days, which is much higher. So one area that the government has been actually committing to since BN days, actually, since 2017, is to increase maternity leave to 90 days.
Right.
And that has been put in the draft that's sitting in government now, 90 days. So that's number one. And the second related to that is paternity leave. So we cannot just say, okay, childbirth means only the mother needs to take responsibility. Mm. The father also needs to take responsibility. And the father wants to be there these days. So we did a study last year with VAS.AI, the one I was referring to. And one question was on paternity leave. And what we found was that almost half of working women, reported that their partner, the husband, had less than 1 week of paternity leave. And many had even less than just a few days. More than half of women said this was really not enough and negatively affected them in many ways. So we need to introduce, and currently we do not have any paternity leave. So there's cases where, for example, you can take annual leave, 1 or 2 days. It's not enough, but some people, they cannot even take annual leave. Maybe they need to apply in advance. Mm. And then the birth comes, you cannot predict the exact day your baby's going to come out, there are fathers who say, hey, actually, I had a child. I could not take paternity leave because of this.
Wow.
So government needs to introduce paternity leave. Currently, there's no requirement for private sector to have any paternity leave. Public sector has 7 days. So if you're a government servant, you get 7 days. So we need to introduce at least some kind of minimum standard for all companies. And there are other areas, there's a lot of other amendments in the Draft Employment Act amendments. So, it covers not just gender, not just women, it covers so many other issues and they're largely positive. So what we're saying is this thing is sitting there, and we know these things are so important, even more so during, you know, COVID MCO, where gender disparities have increased. So why not just, you know, we need to just pass that bill. It's there. It's been drafted. It's been sitting there. You just make a few improvements and pass it up.
Shireen, the third demand made in the statement is about criminalizing stalking. Talk to me about stalking in Malaysia. How serious is the issue here, and what will criminalizing it help? How will it help the issue?
May I pass this over to Renchung? Because I think WHO is spearheading this anti-stalking campaign.
Renchung, what do you think?
The bigger picture here for listeners out there is that there are so many things that we need to change. And now we're talking about ones that specifically on gender and violence against women. And all these things can only happen, or at least the process can only, you know, move further once Parliament sits. Because only Parliament can pass laws in an accountable and inclusive way, or more inclusive way. So stalking is one of those things. So what's the issue with stalking now? Say you're being followed around. Someone follows you from your house to your workplace, and then after work, from your workplace to your house. These are stalking behavior, and it's quite scary. You may know the person, you may not know the person. It could be an ex-partner, maybe. It could be someone who has an interest in you. It could be just a total stranger. So currently, this kind of behavior is not a crime, meaning the police can't really do anything unless the person says they threaten you or they hit you or they damage your property, for example. So this kind of behavior has been recognized as very dangerous. And in many countries, an offense of stalking has been created. Stalking and harassment, saying this is wrong. You know, if this happens to you, you can get a protection order or restraining order. This term restraining order that, you know, a lot of people hear about in TVs. That doesn't exist in Malaysia for in the criminal system, unless it's domestic violence or trafficking. So what we need to do is create an offense of stalking, so that these things, the police and, you know, can at least provide some kind of protection. There is a agreement by government agencies and commitments from government to actually create an offense of stalking, so that people in this situation can be protected. And we know, based on a study that, again, a different study that WAO did with Vast.ai, specifically on looking at stalking, that more than a third of people in Malaysia have experienced stalking. So 36% of Malaysians have experienced some form of stalking that caused them fear, meaning maybe someone followed them around, someone repeatedly communicated with them in a way that made them scared. So a third, that's a lot of people. So there is a commitment, there is draft legislation that government agencies have agreed on that is very much in line with what other countries have done already, Singapore, UK, for example. And that, again, has stalled because of Parliament not sitting. So we need to, if Parliament reconvenes, then this law can be brought to Parliament, debated, and turned into legislation that can protect thousands of Malaysians each year.
Now, before we wrap up this conversation, would you all have a final message for us?
Final message. Well, we just wanted especially the government to know that we are not here to battle you out. You know, we are here as partners, because it needs, like, we kept on saying a whole of society, a whole of country approach, right? And NGOs, we relay voices from the ground, you know, and try to facilitate what needs to be done with the various ministries, agencies, and ultimately also Parliament. And right now, as you can see, it is really, we really need Parliament to open up, but we have to make sure that the MPs need to also be to back up as well in their conduct, because we are running, so to speak, a survey, a public survey, just to get people's views on how they view MPs act during sessions in Parliament. So right. hopefully this will become an eye-opener to the MPs, because I feel if you don't get this kind of feedback, then you won't know, because you'll always be... It's just a natural thing that we tend to be in our bubble, right? So any constructive suggestions or insights will be really helpful, you know, in making our... promoting our agenda further. And the agenda is just to get people's issues, you know, are responded to adequately, even more so in a pandemic. As we've often said, it's becoming almost like a cliche, but I hope it's not, that we do not want to leave anyone behind. You know, it mm-hmm. is part of our Malaysia's commitment in the development agenda, you know, to get all this achieved. And this is one of our ways as part of JAG to also ensure that government needs to get things done, needs to implement, needs to accelerate. And it's not starting from scratch. Some of them are there. It just needs a bit of a final push. And even if those that needs to start from scratch, we are not going to let them do it on their own, but we are always here to provide our necessary expertise, you know, and leverage on that.
I think we said it all. So many people and so many institutions are calling for Parliament to sit, and we are too, because without Parliament, we cannot get our legislative reform going. We cannot provide accountability and oversight to government policy that they're rolling out during COVID. And we need to do so in a way that is accountable, in a way that is inclusive and transparent. And Parliament is the only way to do that.
Thank you so much, guys, for speaking with me today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Yu Ren Chung, Deputy Executive Director at the Women's Aid Organization, and Shirin Junisha, the Program and Operation Manager at the All Women's Action Society, AWAM. And they were sharing the need to look at issues faced by this country during the pandemic, especially through a gendered prism, and why Parliament needs to reconvene immediately. So if you missed any part of the conversation, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app or bfm.my or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Dashran Johan, and this has been Live and Learn on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.